Good afternoon, Your Honors. May it please the Court, my name is Edward Chai. I'm serving as counsel.
I think we're still in the morning.
I'm sorry?
I think it's still good morning.
Oh, good morning, Your Honor.
There we go. Okay.
Good morning, Your Honor. Please, the Court. My name is Edward Chung. I'm serving as counsel on behalf of the appellant, Gregoria Marquez. I'd like to reserve 5 minutes for rebuttal.
Okay, good. Keep your eye on the clock. It counts down.
Thank you, Your Honors. As you know, this is an appeal regarding a discrimination, a whistleblowing, a negligent investigation, and a 42 U.S.C. 1983 claim that was granted summary judgment in favor of the respondent in the district court. The standard for review, as the Court is very well aware of, is a de novo review in review of these motions for summary judgments. In consideration of all the evidence that has been placed on the record, we believe that the evidence clearly shows where there was discrimination, where there was a basis for wrongful termination of Ms. Marquez, and basically that in hindsight, taking a look at her whole time that she was at Harborview, which is 43 years, she was an employee of Harborview Medical Center. She dedicated herself to her job, and not around 2007, she became a patient service specialist too. And then in 2011, that's when she went ahead and made a complaint regarding possible misappropriations of time in relation to some of her fellow employees. When she brought this to her supervisor, Ms. Laura Newcomb, she basically denied that any such activity actually occurred. Thereafter, this is when Ms. Marquez started to notice some sort of treatment being treated differently. The record indicates that she was told that she should retire a number of times.
So are you bringing an age discrimination claim?
Yes, that's correct, Your Honor.
Pursuing that?
Yes, Your Honor. And basically there's enough evidence from the record, especially in a discrimination case, for the court to make a reasonable inference. And I really focus on the word inference here because the evidence that we have really shows that there is a continuous pattern of conduct that Ms. Gregoria Marquez experienced while she was at Harborview Medical Center.
Well, we're kind of really in the third, if you make a prima facie case, then there's a lot of evidence in the record that she was being counseled and told not to confront other employees and things happen. So then we're really moving back to whether it's pretextual, right?
Yes.
And the burden of persuasion there.
Yes.
In terms of. So you have the 2011 instance where she thought that that someone was improperly claiming overtime, and Ms. Newcomb said she couldn't substantiate that, but then your client pursued an audit, and I believe that the audit found some support for that, right?
That's correct, Your Honor.
Okay, and then there's also a 2013 complaint against Ms. Newcomb, which was investigated by Mr. Payne, correct?
That's correct, Your Honor.
All right. That occurred if I'm getting the timeline correctly, that occurred after they had already started calling her in about don't confront people.
That's correct, Your Honor.
And then it occurred, I think it was, they started calling her in maybe in March, then that was in June, and then it was decided in December, and then she was terminated the following year.
Yeah, your timeline's accurate, Your Honor.
Okay. So I'm wondering if that, the first one clearly, I guess what I can tell from the record, your client was at least an average employee?
Average to above employee, but there are some issues here because one of the witnesses in this particular case that provided testimony, Constance Smith, said that some of her evaluations were not even prepared by her. She signed off on it, but the evaluations itself were not signed by her. So to me, that creates a very genuine issue of material fact is who is signing off on these evaluations. Because if we're using...
How does that go? I'm assuming at this stage of the game that we expect and assume that she was a valued employee for 43 years. If anything, this strikes me as a very patient response. But I don't understand the real answer to what Judge Callahan's talking about, which is, and I have the same question, aren't we in pretext land? You have to show pretext?
Yes.
Because there's a legitimate non-discriminatory reason here, right? She had been counseled not to approach these employees this way. And I just want to give you every fair opportunity to respond, because I'm in the very same spot where I think we're really just talking about pretext here.
Well, yeah, thank you for directing me in that direction, Your Honor. Basically, yes, you're correct, Your Honor. But that policy, which Ms. Newcomb had basically drafted, was not a Washington State University policy. And actually, if you take a look at the policy, it actually says she's expected to do, not to be involved with these other employees during the course of this investigation, and it may lead to her termination.
So why does it matter whether that's an official policy or not? Is it your contention that it was ginned up for your client and it was somehow improper?
Yes, and in the 43 years that Ms. Gregoria Marquez was employed there, she never came across this.
Okay, so let's say for a minute that it was ginned up in the course of this investigation. Mm-hmm. I don't mean pejoratively ginned up, but she's directed not to interact with the people that are involved in this
Correct.
Conflict. What's wrong with that?
What's wrong with that? Well, first thing, she doesn't even know who these people are. So she,
So she's calling people. She's showing up at someone's house. She's trying to get to the bottom of who the snitches are.
Correct.
Basically.
Correct.
And they tell her, stay out of it. Just don't do that.
Well,
and she doesn't.
Well, that even raises an issue whether that is actually accurate, because a number of these employees that she's worked with for a number of years, she's gone over to their house. It's reasonable for an employee to go to another employee's house and make discussions, especially if she didn't know initially
employee. Okay, so I would agree with you, after 43 years of what appears to be unquestioned decent employment, whatever. If they came the first time she confronted, I think it was Valdez or what, who's a friend to a friend and a colleague, or there's some kind of a friend enemy or whatever. I don't know what we want to call her. But anyway, the first time, if they had fired her the first time she did that, I don't think anyone would disagree with you. That would seem to be unfair. But they called her in and said, don't do that. And then she keeps, and they didn't, and then, how many times did they call her in and say, don't do that, before she finally got fired?
Well, yeah, they told her not to do that.
Could you answer Judge Callahan's question? How many times was it? Was it three?
I think it was two times, but it might have been three
okay,
times.
Okay, well, I'll have it in my notes. Go ahead. Forgive me.
Okay. So basically, the answer to your question is, if you actually take a look at the deposition testimony that took place here, and we actually asked Ms. Valdez about the communications that she had with Ms. Marquez. She testified that she never felt that there was any retaliation being brought against her.
Well, but the thing is, if your employer says, hey, don't contact people about what we're doing here, and then you continue to do it, I think what we're trying to say is, and we haven't talked about this, but what I'm hearing is they gave some reasons here. So now you go to pretext. Mm. They shifted it. I think you're going to have a hard time saying that didn't give some reasons, because your client even admitted to doing some of the contacts after she was told not to.
But how far does that arm reach in terms of management that you in the workplace? Does it go all the way outside of the workplace?
So are you basically saying that they didn't give a legitimate business reason?
I don't believe they did, no. And especially if this is a policy that's not – I mean, this is a letter that's basically drafted by someone who disagreed with her in the past, and she's reported for, misconduct – or not, actually managing the way she should have managed, that creates a reasonable inference here that there's something beyond than what's going here, what we see.
So are you talking, is that for pretext, or has the burden shifted? Did they give a legitimate business reason, and then are you talking that for pretext, or where are you talking that for?
In order for them to give a legitimate business reason, we have to take a look at the language of the letter that Ms. Newcomb gave to Ms. Gregoria Marquez. And basically, we have to also ask ourselves, where does she get the authority or rights to be able to make this type of statement that she's not allowed to communicate regarding an investigation? It's almost equivalent to not being able to defend yourself or investigate
a
claim.
It's pretty common that when they do internal investigations that people are told, don't go out and harass people, because then people start saying, well, I don't want to talk to you because so-and-so showed up. I mean, one of the gals, Valdez or whatever, said, called and said, she's outside my house. What do I do? Right?
Yes, but I mean, that's a little, that raises an issue of material fact too, because they've been friends for such a long time.
But there are several employees who complained, and that from the management's perspective, they had other employees complaining and even saying that they were frightened. What's management supposed to do? They told you to stay away. So I shared Judge Callahan's concern. I want to give you an opportunity to make sure that my notes are right, if I could. I think they talked to your client and counseled her on March 15th, 2013. And again on March 29th, 2013, and again on January 23rd, 2014.
That's correct. Those three times.
So that's three times. And then the final counseling session was March 17th, 2014. But at that occasion, then that followed up immediately with a notice of intent to terminate. So it was really, I think, three times they called her in and said, please don't do this. Don't do this.
But the evidence that you're relying upon here is evidence put forth by the respondent in a motion for summary judgment. All these people are not disinterested parties. They're employees.
But you don't contest that she was counseled three times not to do this, do you?
Yes. No, I
didn't. It didn't happen?
The facts state that.
So the fact of that is not challenged.
But the question is, especially employment discrimination cases, is if we have really disinterested parties providing testimony on behalf of the respondent here. These people, you know, they're coming into, I mean, there's an investigation taking place. I suspect that these people have their interests of their jobs.
Your best argument, in my view, would be that she was a good employee for 43 years. Then she called to the attention of her supervisor something being amiss. The supervisor didn't agree with her. She went further, and then the audit proved her right. And so she pestered off her supervisor, basically, because then the supervisor was in charge of paying overtime or something like that.
Sure.
So her problems, your best argument is that that's where the problem started, and then that's why it's pretextual that everything else that happened.
Yeah, and then in addition to that, Your Honor, she did make another complaint in 2013.
She did.
Against Newcomb, she was terminated. So. Yes. You know, we look at motions for summary judgment. We have to take light most favorable to the non-moving party. Employment discrimination cases, this is even more, it's very difficult in any discrimination case to actually show that there is intent to discriminate. And that's why that standard is a little bit more lenient in these type of cases. And I believe that if you take a look at the totality of the circumstances here, there's just too much evidence that I think a reasonable jury could take a look at this and say, well, something's amiss here. Something is not just right.
Can I interrupt you and ask,
sure, thank you.
What's your strongest contention for pretext? What's the strongest argument for pretext? They have a legitimate non-discriminatory reason because they counseled her three times and they had employee complaints that she continued to pester people. So what's the strongest pretext argument?
Well, the letter itself, we believe, is not a basis for them to be able to terminate her. And it was just vague. And in addition to that, she should be able to have the right to, during an investigation, to still be able to communicate with her fellow employees or talk with them or have communications with them. And if you're telling someone that they can't speak about it, can't talk about it, you know, she doesn't have any...
What's your best case that when they have an ongoing investigation and they cite a policy and say, don't talk to the people involved until we're done with it, what's your best case that says that that's just a flat-out violation?
Well, because... Again, that's not a policy. It was something that was just created. I mean, there's a standard. This is an agency. If there's an administrative agency that has certain rules and they acknowledge that they have certain rules and administrative rules, there's no rule here that this actually exists. This is something that is based on the very person that she reported and then thereafter reported again, and thereafter she was terminated.
Well, but your client's trying to get to the bottom of who's snitching her off about contacting. You know, are you the one that called? Or, you know, she's trying to get to the bottom, and they're just saying, knock it off, just let the investigation run its course.
Is she, or is she really just trying to have a communications with, you know, someone has made a statement. I mean, there was an investigation that she had time cards in her car, and found out that she never actually did. And so it's reasonable for her to start seeing something like, are they targeting me? Is something going on here? Or is this just this Laura Newcomb lady who's just going to keep on going after me time and time again? And we put forth that that's specifically what it is, because if you take a look at the 2011 complaint, 2013 complaint, and then termination, there's just too much there that we believe that. I understand about, you know, the pretext argument. We think it has to do with that letter that she received in relation to who she was able to communicate with. And I think that she has a right to be able to look into allegations that have been made about her, especially since allegations in the past have been found to be false.
Okay, now we've taken you down to about 8 seconds. We'll make sure you get enough time in rebuttal, however.
Thank you.
Good morning. May it please the Court. Howard Goodfriend for the appellee, Harborview Medical Center. The district court properly granted summary judgment here because the reasons for Ms. Marquez's dismissal were objective, they were documented in emails, and they were admitted as true by Ms. Marquez in interviews.
I agree with you that you get past giving a legitimate business, but I'm going to say I have trouble. I'm pondering over, when we get to pretext, it's a burden of persuasion, and we basically have to conclude that no reasonable juror would find that.
That's what the district
So said. She does have going for 43 years of no problems, basically. I mean, it's, you know, I mean, she's not a problem.
No,
43
no
years. She makes a complaint about saying, I think someone was overpaid. And it appears that, and Newcomb either shined her on, couldn't substantiate it or whatever. She goes further. The audit shows that Newcomb was wrong. And it, you can infer from, a reasonable person could infer from that, that you're not very happy about, I mean, she didn't stop with what Newcomb said to her. She went further. And then Newcomb probably got in a little bit of trouble because she did, that employee was overpaid. There was some sort of problem. And then you have another complaint later that Newcomb, that she complained about Newcomb, and they found that they didn't substantiate that. And so her life suddenly goes all downhill. The time frame is such that the time frame works for her. So,
well, let me address that.
And the fact that she was not a problem before.
I don't think the time frame works for her, Your Honor, and the reason is this. The incident in 2011 is, I think, as you portrayed it, she was, in fact, found to be correct. The employee at issue was misusing overtime and was forced to repay that overtime. So Ms. Marquez was, in fact, correct in 2011.
Right, but what happens, her supervisor doesn't usually like that.
Well, there's really no evidence of anything that occurred adverse to Ms. Marquez from 2011 until 2013. 2013, Ms. Newcomb learns that there's an allegation that Ms. Marquez has protected employee information in her car. She brings Ms. Marquez in to interview her, and what does she say? She says, I believe you, in fact. And I found no evidence to support this. And she gives her a policy statement that says, and this is a university policy, it's in the ERs, it's at SER 48, it's policy 46.3, that says don't retaliate against people. And in consultation with HR, while they're investigating this, she's told don't contact people, don't harass them. Standard language given to her from HR by Nora Balsh. Not something
question
that,
right,
yes.
There. Is that the March 15th meeting?
Yes, the meeting occurred at March 15th. The letter was given to her in advance of the meeting on March 8th.
So that's a meeting with Marquez, her union representative, and Newcomb and Balch.
Correct.
Okay.
Yes. The letter that's given to her is in advance of that meeting,
yes,
saying, during this week before, don't harass people. Mm-hmm. But what does she learn, what does Ms. Newcomb learn thereafter? In fact, she has harassed people. And this is not something that's made up, as it's admitted, it's not contested, and there are emails from the employees feeling uncomfortable about this questioning from Ms. Valdez.
On March 16th, the next day, swear on your mother's grave.
Correct.
That you did not make the complaint.
Correct.
Shaking in fear.
Correct. She admits that she called Maria Gonzaga and asked her if she was the one who said she had these in a car. She admits that she confronted Teresa Valdez and said, you turned me into Laura. And she admits that this occurs. Again, on March 21st, another incident occurs. She confronts Valdez in the pantry. Gonzaga emails Newcomb on March 22nd to complain. There's another meeting with her, with Marquez, on March 29th. She's again counseled, but she admits these actions occurred. And
excuse me, that meeting on March 29th, it's Newcomb, Balt, Marquez, and our union,
and
representative
union rep.
Again. Same four people?
Yes, correct.
Okay, thank you.
At which Marquez admits trying to find out who told on her. She admits confronting Valdez in the pantry, and she admits calling Gonzaga at home, as Gonzaga put in an email.
Okay.
May 8th, notice of final counseling. Again, she's, don't do this. Thereafter, she calls Laura Vo, another employee, to find out who is talking about her to management. And then on May 14th, there's the final counseling session with Balch, Newcomb, and Marquez. She's given a lengthy list of how she violated the prior counseling, and again, with an action plan telling her, don't confront other employees. So, really, if you're talking about the March of the 2011
then
incident.
And after that, that's when she complains about Newcomb.
In June, yes. There, after she's given the notice of final counseling, is her complaint. So, that complaint in June 2013 cannot be a cause of the final counseling. Absolutely, it can't.
Why not?
Because the final counseling occurred a month earlier, in May.
And
her complaint is, and Marquez's complaint is made on in June of 2014.
But she doesn't get fired till the next year.
But she doesn't get fired until the next year.
So it could be considered for why she got fired.
It could be, perhaps.
Well, it happened before she got fired.
It did. It did
so
happen.
So I'm with you on.
It did happen before she got fired.
It didn't happen before she was being counseled.
But what happens thereafter? Again, she admits. I mean, we have the email from Valdez, who tells her that she's seeking information about Padilla, Gonzaga, and Nuka, and making her uncomfortable. Marquez admits going to Laura Vo's home thereafter, calling Gonzaga a spy. So these things all occurred, and they're documented. She's then put on paid administrative leave in February 25th, 2014. And that evening, Marquez shows up at Valdez's house and is waiting there when Valdez comes home. Again, there's an email reporting this. She admits that this happens, and Valdez reports that she's getting daily phone calls from Ms. Marquez and that she's scared of her. And at that point, there's another meeting at which Valdez, at which Ms. Marquez tells Newcomb, quote, if I go down, they all go down too.
That's the March 17th meeting.
Yes, that's correct.
Okay.
At that point, on March 20th, there's a recommendation of dismissal.
So where are the age things happen? Were the comments about who's going to retire, or it'd be better if she retired, or where do those factor in?
Well, what the district court found, and I believe it's true, if you look at the deposition of Constance Smith, there's another employee who basically said, I heard things. I heard that she was...
What are the statements that are in the record?
The statements that are in the record
because
are...
Because we have to consider
the only statements that are in the record are that Newcomb mentioned retirement to her in 2005 when she became her supervisor. And Newcomb says she was assessing staffing and just trying to determine what the unit's needs were. That's 10 years before.
Isn't there some comment somewhere, though it might be disputed, but for these purposes, that it would be better if she retired, and when was that?
And we don't know. We don't know whether that occurred, you know, during this entire, after she had received final counseling or after she was placed on paid administrative leave.
Okay,
we don't
but
know.
It wasn't in 2005.
No.
That wasn't in 2005.
We don't know when it happened. And we don't know who made them. We don't know when they occurred. They're based upon the deposition testimony of Constance Smith. which is in about ER 156 or so. And she admits, as the district court said in his order, that when questioned, she said she couldn't relate comments, negative comments about Ms. Marquez to her age.
This may not be directly relevant to the legal question in front of us, but I do have to ask, is there a difference in terms of retirement benefits for Ms. Marquez, depending on whether she voluntarily retired or whether she was terminated?
I'm not sure because it's not in the record, but my understanding is that her benefits were vested as a PERS 1 employee based upon her years of service, and that they could not be forfeited as a result of the status, the reason why she left employment.
Were you done with answering Judge Fletcher's question? I apologize. Just following up on what your answer to Judge Callahan's question, I think Marquez alleges at SER 2226 that Newcomb said in around 2011 suggests that she should retire, not just back in 2005. Isn't that right? That's the allegation, I think.
I'll have to look at that site, but that's possible. That's possible. I was referring to the deposition testimony of Ms. Smith, who was unable to put any dates on any of the statements, or for that matter, identify with specificity anyone who said anything about her age.
I think Marquez has made the allegation, though. That's okay. My only point.
That's quite possible.
Okay.
But the point is, as I think the district court rightfully determined, that action, either protected action or an age-related statement occurring in 2011, really has such slim causal connection to adverse employment action occurring 2.5 or 3 years later that is based upon specific, documented, and admitted facts of wrongdoing, that no reasonable, rational fact finder could find that it was a substantial factor in her termination. The fact of the matter is there are many, many elder, people over the age of 40 in Ms. Marquez's age bracket working in that unit. She was unable to show, any.
You weren't going to say 40 is elderly. You weren't
I was going to say that if you're over 40, you're. And adverse employment action occurs to any of us, we have established at least a prima facie claim that adverse employment action is taken to us because we're in a protected class.
Right.
That's
disputed, my point. At least at summary judgment, that some comments were made that perhaps she should retire. She's got that in the record, right?
She does.
So
but we don't know when, and we know that the only one that's at issue was made 2 years before this happened.
But you're relying on attenuation.
We are.
Right.
We are. And, I know that the lapse of time is not sufficient, and that's particularly perhaps more true in retaliation cases because we know people can lie in wait and then pounce. That's possible. But in age discrimination cases, I think, to show animus continuing for 2.5 years, you need something more than a simple statement about retirement 2 years earlier. And, the cases,
established that Ms. Marquez was right in, I think her claim is that her theory is that she showed up her supervisor, that in the end she was right about the initial
But nothing happens to her for 2 years.
So my question is, when was it established that she was right?
We don't have the date that occurred, but we know.
Estimate?
It was sometime in 2011.
Okay.
Yes. I think there are allegations that she made in 2007 and then again in 2011, and I think that one, the 2011 one, was resolved that year. So really, in the absence of any adverse action taken to an employee over a two-year period, it's very, very, very difficult to make any sort of causal link between the one and the other.
It's almost an intellectual or abstract question, but it's bothering me. I think we are at the stage of pretext. I mean, there's a legitimate business reason given her continuing and repeated violations of what she'd been told to do. Then the question is pretext. Well, there are two reasons why it could be pretext. One of them, as suggested by Judge Callahan, seems to me at least plausible that Newcomb has it out for her because she's been shown up. And as you said, it does not have to be closely proximate in time. You could lay in wait. I mean, I don't know whether you read my opinion in Kozalter, which makes that very point.
Yes.
Well, it may well be pretext, and that Newcomb was laying in wait and finally got a chance to get her. Now,
but if that were the,
but this is going to be a complicated question. I'm struggling with it, and it's pretext. Well, if it is pretextual, does that make it go away for purposes of age discrimination?
Well,
that is to say, this is not the real reason it happened.
I think
so. That's gone as a reason, and now what we have is that reason doesn't apply. They've got no reason to fire her, and we have in the record all this talk about retirement.
Well, to start with the first aspect of your question, if I may eat up into a little of my time, I think I will.
No.
If it were retaliatory, and this is, I think, why Judge Martinez found no reasonable fact finder could find discrimination in this case. Were it reasonable to assume that she was laying in wait for a reason, she would have done a lot more with this protected information in the car allegation than dismiss it and say, I believe you. And it's undisputed that she did. She said, I believe you. There's nothing here. Go on, but just don't harass people. And the only reason she was called back in was because other people came and complained to her. What's an employer to do in that situation? So as to that point, Your Honor, I think in this situation, there is no causal connection for retaliation. As for age discrimination, I would agree 100% that a stray remark and you know, there are other cases.
I'm not sure you're agreeing with me. What I was saying is, if you take away this reason and call it pretextual, what we have is talk about retirement and then firing.
Well, but you have talk about the only statement about retirement that anybody, and it's Ms. Marquez, I guess, who made it, is in 2011. And nothing happens for over 2 years after that?
I got it.
No reasonable fact finder could find that this was pretext on this set of facts.
Okay.
Thank you
very much. Could you put 3 minutes on the clock, please?
Your Honors, on the issue that we have to take a look at here is, was there retaliation? Was there harassment? Was that the basis for which Ms. Marquez was dismissed? Specifically, we know deposition testimony says, contrary to what Ms. Newcomb represented on the record, that Teresa Valdez claimed that she felt that she was being harassed. Deposition testimony shows completely opposite to that information.
What deposition
testimony? For Teresa Valdez. Teresa Valdez asked, you know, did you in any way feel that you were being retaliated against? And she specifically said no. So right here we have...
That really doesn't matter, because it's a question of, if your employer can tell you, don't do this, and you continue to do that, it doesn't really... Her state of mind, to me, doesn't really matter.
Perhaps, but the issue here is, you know, she's able to have conversations.
And so why are they still contacting the employer and saying, I've got, you know, I mean, obviously down the line, and, you know, and that's probably more evidence of the exact reasons that you don't want people contacting people and pushing them around so that they change their stories all the time is, but there, it's undisputed that during the period of time before they took action against her, that they kept contacting the employer saying, you know, she's calling me, you know.
Well, that was a concerning issue when I asked Ms. Newcomb about these emails that she was receiving complaints of. And then when we did the deposition testimony of, you know, Ms. Valdez, she said that this is not true. These are not accurate statements.
But what about Gonzaga? So that March 15th, the first time she was counseled. The very next day, she contacted Maria Gonzaga, right, who denied it, and then denied being the informant. And then your client apparently responded, it's Teresa Valdez then, and then went to her the next day, swear on your mother's grave. And what you've just reminded me, that's right. Her deposition testimony is then that she wasn't concerned. But what about Gonzaga?
Well, I mean, the problem that I have, at least with if you have one domino, then the rest of the dominoes fall down, is I can't. That is a credibility issue that I believe that should be presented to a jury.
I think it is. If the employer gets a complaint from Gonzaga saying this person's contacting me and she's scaring me, what's the employer supposed to do?
Well,
told her to stay away.
We know that she allegedly received a complaint from Teresa Valdez as well. And we know that Teresa Valdez claimed that that email and that complaint wasn't accurate.
Except your client doesn't, and then I'm going to stop. But I don't think your client raises a material issue fact about having approached Gonzaga, right? She doesn't deny that she did this.
No, she does not.
Okay.
No, and one of the other things that I would say is that policy itself, there is a Washington State policy, and that's my whole point here, is that you're not to retaliate, harass, or get involved in this type of activity. But the concern here is she's kind of terminated really in relation to this letter that Laura Newcomb presented to her, not really that policy. And that policy, they haven't really established, was there retaliation or harassment in relation to this. Even if you consider those letters, whether she felt fearful or not, that even raises a question as whether she actually did harass or this amounts to retaliation by a trier of fact.
We're now taking you over time. Could you just sum up?
Yeah, yes. In light of this information, Your Honor, we're going to ask that the court remand this back to the district court and for a trial. Thank you, Your Honor.
Okay. Thank both sides for their helpful arguments. The case of Marquez versus Harborview Medical Center submitted.